This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In the world of social media, information travels with accelerated velocity. But still, this video was one for the record books.
To level with you, this movie expires on December 31st, 2012. And its only purpose is to stop the rebel group, the LRA, and their leader, Joseph Kony.
That's the voice of Jason Russell, co-founder of Invisible Children, a nonprofit advocacy group. On March 5th, Invisible Children posted a 30-minute film called Kony 2012.
Joseph Kony is the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, a brutal Ugandan rebel group that for decades abducted thousands of children and forced them to become child soldiers or sex slaves. Kony has been indicted by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. So far, he has evaded capture.
Enter Invisible Children and Kony 2012. Skillfully produced and edited, Kony 2012 aims its emotional message squarely at social media savvy young people, urging them to join Invisible Children's campaign to bring Joseph Kony to justice.
Governments are trying to keep up.
And now we can't test the freedom.
And older generations are concerned.
Many people are very concerned about tomorrow. They could get worse next year.
The game has new rules. The next 27 minutes are an experiment. But in order for it to work, you have to pay attention.
And pay attention they did. A mere 6 days after Kony 2012 went live on the internet, it had been viewed but more than 100 million times. It is one of the fastest spreading viral videos ever.
And here's where it gets complicated. The movie is enormously controversial for the way it depicts Africans and for the fact that it calls for a form of military intervention in Uganda. It has sparked as much outrage and criticism as it has awareness and activism.
And yet, for the tens of millions of young people who viewed it, Kony 2012 was likely their first ever introduction to Uganda. Suddenly, students were flooding classrooms with talk about the video and questioning their teachers about how they could help Africa's children.
So that's what we're going to talk about today, teaching Kony 2012, what schools should do when social media drives the conversation, how should students and teachers navigate the flood of viral information on the internet.
Now, the challenges are so significant, Boston University's African Studies Center held a workshop just last weekend to help teachers. So we'll start with this report from WBUR's Rachel Rohr.
About three dozen Boston area teachers are gathered on the fifth floor of a creaky old building in the heart of BU's Charles River campus. There are also a couple of high school students, including Jen Hero, a 17-year-old junior at Hudson High School.
I remember going on Facebook one day, and I think probably every other one of my friends had it posted, and everybody was talking about it, which was, you know, really, really awesome to have everybody come together and be like, you know, like, we need to do something. We need to come together and help do something about it.
Hero's world history teacher, Ken High, is here too.
They saw it initially and then came to me to say, yeah, what should I know about this? Teach me more. And so that's why I was excited about this presentation today, because I told my students, I don't know much about it either. Hold on, I'm going to find out more and then we'll discuss it.
The African Studies Center's outreach director, Barbara Brown, who's been teaching teachers for more than two decades, starts off the workshop with a survey. She asks how many of the teachers have gotten questions from students about Kony 2012. Nearly everyone raises a hand.
Yes. Now, how many of you have already had discussions in your class?
This time, about three-quarters raise their hands. Professor Tim Longman, director of BU's African Studies Center, tells the group that he finds Kony 2012 deeply troubling, because while it brings attention to the kids abducted and turned into child soldiers in Joseph Kony's Lord's Resistance Army, it also depicts Ugandans as passive victims.
That's probably the biggest thing that bothers me about it, is the depiction of Africans as savages incapable of helping themselves, and then what we really need is a bunch of white kids from the United States to go and save them.
Research scientist Patrick Vink with the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative says while he supports arresting Kony, that action does not translate into social justice for Ugandans. And the film's goal of getting the U.S. to help the Ugandan military is risky, especially given that Kony is now believed to be operating in a different country.
All of these groups have been and are recognized to have committed human rights violations. providing them more weapons is just not going to solve the conflict.
Caitlin Murphy, who teaches a social justice course at Hudson High School, says for all of the film's flaws, it was exciting to see students caring about an issue and motivated by the idea that they could create change.
To have something where the initial excitement came from the kids was really helpful. So though the film's not perfect, I think it did do a lot of good in getting kids interested and involved.
Throughout the half-day history lesson on Uganda, the workshop's organizers emphasize that it's possible to maintain students' interest and excitement while giving them a more sophisticated understanding of the complex situation in Central Africa. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Rachel Rohr.
So we're talking about Kony 2012 and what can and should happen in schools when viral social media may end up driving the conversation. So teachers, what did your students tell you after they saw the Kony 2012 video? Did you turn it into a lesson? Were you able to? And students, did you wonder why you hadn't heard about Uganda before watching Kony 2012? And what kind of follow-up conversations did you have in class? And I guess this is a question for everybody. In a world where viral media spreads so quickly, are teachers always just going to have to react? Or is there a way for educators themselves to use social media as a proactive teaching tool? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We are also on social media at Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now is the chief organizer behind the workshop you just heard about. Her name is Barbara Brown. She is outreach director at the Boston University African Studies Center. Barbara Brown, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us is Justin Reich. He's a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society and co-director of EdTech Teacher, a professional development consultancy for schools. Justin Reich, welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Barbara Brown, let me start with you. There is a lot to talk about the specifics regarding what was in the Kony 2012 video. We won't be able to get to them all, but briefly, on first pass, when you first saw the video, what were the things that you thought needed to be immediately addressed in a classroom situation?
The classroom needed to complicate the situation. That Africa is not Uganda. Many people think of Africa as a country because they don't know very much. And so I worry that people will reduce Africa to this one situation, which has been a terrible situation. My second reaction was, I want to see some Africans responding to this, because Africans have and Ugandans have. And what we see mostly in the video is Jason Russell and his son.
Right, his young son.
Right.
In fact, the only Africans that I just rewatched it again today, the only Africans that I saw in the video were former child soldiers, at least one of them.
Victims.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is I noticed that there were some very important details which have since reported to have been inaccurately presented in the Kony 12 video, Kony 2012, I should say. For example, that Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army are still even operating in Uganda. Apparently, they're not.
They're not.
He's still at large, but not in Uganda. And that the complication and the number of agencies and militant groups, et cetera, just the long history of the conflict there was very much simplified, and that you know maybe even the current government of Uganda isn't exactly a perfectly sanitized government to begin with. I mean, there's a lot of complication that just goes unnoted in the video.
What also goes mentioned in the video that was of real concern to myself and to many others was that there was no explanation for the rise of Kony 2012, which could feed into an American perception that they in Africa are different from us, and you can't, what they do and how they do it and why they do it isn't something we can understand.
Mm-hmm. So Justin Reich, I'm sorry about that. Justin, let me bring you in here and ask. So you've seen the video. You've heard about the concerns. There's been so much conversation online about it. But say you're a teacher and students, you know, on March 5th came running into the classroom and said, I saw this thing about Uganda. I want to do something. What should a teacher do in that moment?
Well, certainly teachers should initially honor and respect and get excited about students' enthusiasm about that. I mean, any time that anyone is doing anything that makes students engaged civic actors, that's certainly an impulse that we want to capture and preserve. And then, you know, it's entirely reasonable that teachers, even world history teachers, are not expert in everything that's happening in the world. And so they do have a responsibility to say to their students, I don't know, but, you know, we should stop and we should take some time to think about that. And then the challenge is figuring out, you know, how can teachers make sure that they, you know, build networks around themselves so that they're able to track world events, to gain access to experts, to figure out what people on the web are saying about these kinds of things.
Okay, so the ongoing network building, I think, is a very important point. I want to return to that. But Barbara Brown, I mean, the interesting thing about this story is that it has to do with events that happened in, you know, Africa, an enormous continent with a very, very large history, but maybe one that isn't discussed in depth or with adequate depth in classrooms as it is. I mean, you've been doing years of work to provide educational materials for teachers on how to teach Africa in general. Was the Kony 2012 situation something different? Did teachers come to you and say, I need something more than what you've given me before?
They needed something different. This often teachers are teaching geography, physical and human, or they're teaching world history, and Africa's part of world history. And this Kony 2012 and the Kony situation itself is different. It's current events. Or close to current events. And so they're not up on it, and it's not usually what I work with teachers on. One of the things, for example, that I've done with schools over 10 years ago is we created a poster called How Big is Africa for World Geography that shows inside of Africa you can fit China, Europe, and the United States and have room left over. People are surprised by that because they think China and Africa must be about the same size. 55 million children have now seen this poster.
Well, let me stop you there and ask you. So, if we're at the point in American, you know, primary and secondary education where we're still trying to get kids to understand how large the continent of Africa is, and here comes this powerful video that spreads like wildfire across the internet in a matter of days, making all sorts of claims and also being a call to action. There seems to be this gigantic divide between what kids know and what they're being asked to do through a video like Kony 2012. How do you bridge that divide with the speed, or how do you match the speed that the film, the video itself spreads across the internet?
There's no way to match that. And so I think humility is the first thing. And the second thing is for teachers to say, and I think that's what you were hinting at, is I have an obligation to learn more. This is an incredible teaching moment. And so a teacher can say to the students, none of us knows anything. All of us are learners in life, and this is the chance for us to go deeper, to explore what is the situation now, how can we help, what else is there to know, do we have questions that we want to have answered. And then we created a teaching guide, and one of the things in the teaching guide is to have an explanation for why this crisis developed.
Justin Reich, let me ask you this. The social media part of this continues to be very interesting to me. And you said teachers need to be just developing ongoing networks so that they can react quickly and with authority and information when viral videos emerge like this. But that takes time. Are there things that that teachers can do to increase social media or just even media literacy right now so that maybe the tools for student understanding are just part of the curriculum overall so that when the next big viral video hits, there won't be so much catch-up to do?
I do think that teachers should take the responsibility to recognize that the media diet and the media expectations of people in our century is radically different from what our curriculum is prepared to train people to be able to interpret. So we spend a lot of time in history classes helping people understand texts, written texts, to some extent to understand images, mostly to be able to write in a handful of formats, kind of expository essays. When we think about what kids are going to do with historical material, with civic material, with current events, with politics, they're going to be getting their information from video, from web pages, from tweets, from blog posts, from infographics, from a whole range of different media. We can't stop teaching the old media. We need to continue to teach kids how to interpret written texts or linear print text, but we do have to help them figure out how you interpret a scene, how you interpret a film, how you look at sort of the discursive moves that are made inside Kony 2012s in the same way that you would, you know, help students deconstruct a paragraph or a text.
Barbara Brown?
taking that a little bit further, just to the video, one of the questions we asked in the teaching guide that we produced within several weeks after it came out was, how much time is spent in Uganda in this video? How much time is spent in the United States? Who are the speakers? Who are the people who speak with authority? Who are the people who speak about victimhood? Where is Uganda? So what part of how much of Africa is in Uganda? So that the students can begin to slow down, because a video as powerful as this, as compelling as this, requires people to slow down. And one of the things that I wonder about is, how can teachers respond to a very emotional video and have a rational discussion? That, I think, is an enormous challenge. It's not just the information. It's that you have these students passionate about something, and now you want to have a reasonable discourse.
Justin Reich, that's a very interesting question, and your thoughts on that, especially since so much of the emotion is first engendered outside the classroom, and it's been stewing for a while before it comes into the classroom.
And one thing to add to that is that it's really important that Kony 2012 is not just a video. It's not just a piece of media like we would receive on television. It's situated inside an entire online campaign. So you watch the video in a space that makes it very easy for you to link to their website, that makes it very easy for you to participate in their petitions to buy.
In fact, they explicitly ask people to do that who are watching the video. They say, like us on Facebook, send this to your friends, send us money, wear the Kony 2012 bracelet.
Yeah, the entire, it's so powerful because it not only tells you this captivating narrative, but it asks you to immediately become part of that. That's the piece that social media, I think, makes difference. If someone had released a 30-minute infomercial on television about this story, it wouldn't have near the same impact as having it on the internet, where all these kinds of connections can immediately happen.
Okay, so let me ask you about that, because that was a question that was lingering in my mind. As you said, old media, it's sort of one way and very passive. But in the Kony 2012 video, not only is there a sense that it's not accurate, but that there is a sense imparted that the information is authoritative by virtue of being delivered in a professional manner. But then they even ask you to become part of that community, that authoritative community. Barbara Brown, I mean, that is a very... I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have people for a call to action, but how in a classroom, when you have that sort of personal connection that students may have formed to the cause being championed, can teachers sort of intervene in that and say, wait, like you said, let's take a step back and think about this a little bit? How do you do that in the classroom?
You ask the students to take a deep breath. You tell them that you are not pro or con on this issue. You tell them that you respect and admire their desire to do something, because Joseph Kony is indeed a man who has created and done enormous evil. And then you say, what do we know about Joseph Kony? What more do you want to know? So you encourage them to take this excitement and to learn more. And then you also ask them you don't start with the hard questions, you start with the easier questions. The harder questions is military intervention the way to go? Is sending money to the Ugandan army going to help? There are no easy answers to that question. And that may be the answer. And it's fine if that's what students want to have as their answer. Go for it. But they need to think about it. So they need to actually, and that's what schools often do, is to slow down and think.
And encourage some critical thinking there. Yeah. We are talking about the viral video Kony 2012 and what should happen specifically in schools when social media drives classroom conversation. My guests are Barbara Brown. She is the outreach director at the African Studies Center at Boston University. And Justin Reich. He's a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Annabelle is calling from Weston. You're on the air, Annabelle.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What's your thought?
I just wanted to talk about how my age group in general is obviously obsessed with Facebook and everything, and the video definitely went viral. It was a huge talk, like, in our school, and I just wanted to talk about our teachers and how they impacted our opinion.
So tell me about what happened, Annabelle. I mean, I presume you first saw Kony 2012 maybe when you're at home or with your friends, but not in school, right?
No, yeah, I definitely saw it probably from Facebook.
And what did you first think when you saw it?
I was really impacted by the video. I got really emotional. I felt like I really wanted to help. And I went on the website and everything, and I think I signed the pledge and put in my email. It was really, I felt so bad.
Hmm. And Annabelle, do you mind if I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 15.
Okay, so what happened then in school with your teachers when they found out that so many of you and your friends had seen the video?
Well, I think the teachers didn't want to put an idea in our head. They didn't want to tell us what to think about it. They wanted us to have our own opinions. So they gave us, my history teacher gave me an assignment where we had to read a lot of articles that were pros and cons of the whole video. And just reading all those articles about how the facts were false and emphasized, it really changed my opinion on the whole video. I just felt like they lied to us, and that wasn't really good. So,
Annabelle, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for your call. Justin Reich, what do you hear in what Annabelle's saying? It sounds like what happened at her high school, Weston High School, is exactly what we'd hope for, that slowing down and introducing of other sources and just asking students to think about it. But you also hear how she felt kind of betrayed.
Yep. And that is not, you know, that's on the filmmakers. It's not, I think, the responsibility of educators. But I think that the other part that I hear in that story is that this was a media campaign powerfully designed to make people feel a certain way. And obviously, there are a lot, you know, people can do lots of media campaigns for things that I think are absolutely fabulous and should make people feel really powerful. But it sounds like, you know, Annabelle's school system, you know, hasn't provided a lot of media literacy training for her to be able to watch this video. And I mean, now it has in reaction. But before that, whose responsibility is it in the K-12 school system to make sure that when Annabelle and her colleagues watch a video like this, they're capable of taking the deep breath for themselves?
Well, whose responsibility is it?
Well, right now, we don't know, and that's a real problem. So I think a lot of media literacy is the responsibility of librarian and library media specialists who meet their kids in middle school for one class period a week. It's not clear whether it's, you know, history educators, whether it's English language arts educators. I think there's a general sense that we need to teach our kids 21st century skills, but there's no one specifically in the system who seems to be accountable for that, and school districts need to think really carefully about that.
I want to take another call here. Malay is calling from Draket. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm calling because I'm actually originally from Uganda, and I was very upset with the whole video because as somebody who was actually being very close to the area that was attacked by Kony over the years, and somebody who was a member of Invisible Children, I felt total betrayal that they took advantage of a poor country struggling from its past, and the children for a place that has changed. I mean, I was in Uganda in 2011, February, and I went to Kulu, the area they talk about. None of the things they were mentioning happened. I actually went further step. I went and I met with Dr. Hakana Rugunda, who happened to have negotiated on behalf of Uganda with Kony, and I asked him to put together a video, which we put up on YouTube, to counter this video.
Malay, I'm going to cut you off there. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time, and you bring up a very important point that I want to follow up with our guest. Thank you so much for calling. I mean, so you hear Malay's story there, that that there was a response that came from Africans themselves. And in a way, because of social media, I wonder if young people had the opportunity or have the opportunity to hear that response directly from Africans in a way that maybe they wouldn't prior to the emergence of this new way of conversing with people. Because, you know, for example, just today there was a live chat on the Daily Beast, and former child soldier Ishmael Bea was saying, you know, that the Kony videos offer a feel-good solution, but at the end of the day, buying shirts and hanging posters does nothing on the ground. And that's something that students can hear online. And then also, there was a lot of reaction from digitally connected Africans For example, TMS Rouge from the Native, he's a Native Ugandan and co-founder of the of Project Diaspora. I mean, you can feel, he had his comment that said, "My dear social media savvy click activist, you'll shed a tear, exhaust Facebook's like button, mobilize your cadre of equally ill-informed citizens, and throw money at the problem, but that won't help." Now, the reason why I read those comments, and Barbara Brown, I'll ask you of this, is one of the advantages of this having emerged on social media through the internet is that there was a way or is a way for students to hear voices that weren't featured in the video, maybe in a way that they wouldn't have before.
The difficulty teachers face is that to find what are reasonable voices to hear, since there are so many voices available on the web and other places. So we produced a guide called React and Respond, the Phenomenon of CONI 2012, which is on the university's website, and people can download it there. And it gives responsible voices on multiple perspectives, particularly from the continent. When the video was shown in northern Uganda, there was a riot. People were so upset with the way they were being portrayed. But back to Annabelle, what I'd like to suggest is what a student can do who feels betrayed, or other students, is they can go and look for something and investigate it and decide what they like. And that can be a class project. How do we investigate charities?
Justin Reich, we have just a couple seconds to go, but I wonder, is there maybe more than a silver lining here? Because the one thing CONI 2012 did is it showed that you actually can get students, young people, involved in a cause.
Yeah, I'm deeply disturbed by the language of the last comment or the written comment you read, that, you know, we want people to be socially active, and and it's not enough to disparage them for being click happy. It's about educating them so that when they do become politically active in lots of different ways, they're doing it thoughtfully in an engaged fashion. But there's any time we're getting students civically engaged, we've got to figure out how we can harness that and move it forward.
Justin Reich is a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Barbara Brown, Outreach Director at the African Studies Center at Boston University, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, leave your comments at radioboston.org. There's a lot more coming up after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.